Today, of course, is Earth Day. Earth Day started 48 years ago in 1970. It was created to demonstrate support for environmental protection. It was determined that the event would happen every year on April 22nd, and it falls on a Sunday this year. When the books of the Bible were written, there was no environmental issue as we think of it today. The idea that there might someday be a human threat to the environment, to nature, did not occur to our ancient ancestors. Human control over nature was very modest, of course, at that time. So we do not find and should not expect to find environmental issues addressed in the Bible. But the Bible includes larger understandings that are relevant to the environmental crisis of our time. For one of them is grounded in an understanding of the earth, the natural world. The author of Psalm 24 asks, "To whom does the earth belong?" And then the psalmist answers, "The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof." The earth and all that is belongs to God, not to us. The book of Job includes the most magnificent affirmations about nature. In chapters 38 through 41, the author displays to the character of Job the wonders of nature in all of its beauty and savagery. And then in Job 42, the climax of the book, the character Job exclaims to God, "I had heard of you with the hearing of the ear, but now my eyes behold you." What Job has seen is the glory of God in nature. The glory of God is the radiance, the presence of God in the created world. Job is being consistent with the prophet Isaiah's famous vision in Isaiah 6. "Holy, holy, holy, Lord of God of hosts, the whole earth is filled with your glory." God's glory, God's radiance, God's presence is made known through nature. The natural world is full of God's glory. In one of her books, Barbara Brown Taylor writes, "I know plenty of people who find God most reliably in books, in buildings, and even in other people. I have found God in all of these places too. But the most reliable meeting place for me has always been the creation. I have always known where to go when my own flame was guttering. To lie with my back flat on the fragrant ground is to receive a transfusion of that same power that makes the green blade rise. To remember that I am dirt, and to dirt I shall return, is to be given my life back again. Where other people see acreage, timber and soil, and river frontage, I see God's body. The Creator does not live apart from creation. When I take a breath, God's Holy Spirit enters me." Barbara Brown Taylor. In her diary, the wonderful Anne Frank wrote, "The best remedy for those who are afraid, or lonely, or unhappy, is to go outside. Somewhere where they can be quiet, alone with the heavens, nature, and God. Because only then does one feel that all is as it should be. Well, Anne Frank, Barbara Brown Taylor, Isaiah, the psalmist are saying is that we not only need nature and creation for our physical survival, we need it for our spiritual survival, for our spiritual health, for our mental well-being. But you know the bad news. Writer and native Kentuckian Wendell Berry spells it out clearly. People in my part of the world drank fearlessly from springs and wells, and we swam without anxiety in whatever water was deep enough. Now we know that water pollution is only a part of a package that includes air pollution, soil erosion, deforestation, urban sprawl, architectural ugliness, and other symptoms of a general disregard for the world's life and health. For decades, environmentalists have struggled to be taken seriously, dismissed in the political arena as tree huggers, brushed off in religious circles and churches as peripheral left-wingers, challenged by scientists paid by industry to try to prove that fossil fuels are not harmful. Environmentalists, backed by hard science, have fought the good and often lonely fight. And now, finally, almost everyone acknowledges that the environmentalists were right all along and are right. We're in trouble environmentally. Writer and environmentalist Bill McKibben, who also happens to be a Methodist, says if you care about social justice, this is the biggest battle we've ever faced. Climate change may produce hundreds of millions of refugees. McKibben describes wandering through the land of Bangladesh, where 150 million people live, many of them below sea level. He says their entire homeland will be gone, and this to a people who have done nothing to create the problem. We've all heard the statistics before. We Americans make up 4% of the world's population and produce 25% of the world's greenhouse gases. We burn all 5% of the Earth's surface, including the trees, which are nature's air cleansing mechanism, to build and dig and drill and produce more greenhouse gases. Pat Prokop will tell you that the damage we have done is immense. But we certainly don't want to make it worse. So as Christians, what can we do about it? How can we help create the kingdom of God on earth when the earth itself is under attack and being harmed and is in danger? What can little old you and me do when much of the attacks are by huge corporations that are obsessed with money? Well, for one thing we can do, we can vote. We are blessed to live in a country where we elect those who govern our land, who set rules and regulations. So vote for people who will choose ethics over money. Do your homework. Learn about the people running for office. What are their ethics? How was the person raised? How much knowledge do they have of the environment? What ways has he or she served people before? What leadership positions have they held? What is their voting record, if they have one? It doesn't matter if they are Republican, Democrat, or Independent. As Christians, we shouldn't vote for someone just because they are of a specific party. Vote for people who are ethical. Vote for people who strive to follow the teachings of Jesus Christ, who don't just talk the talk, but walk the walk. Our earth, our lives depend on it. But I am making the assumption that you and I care enough about the earth and our environment to make these efforts. And that may not be a good assumption to make. But I at least have a remedy for it. I know what can motivate you and me. It's been said that the problem of poverty, for instance, isn't that we don't care about poor people. It goes down deeper than that. The problem is that we don't know them. If we knew them, we'd do something about it. We'd care for them. The same could be said with the LGBT issue. Someone may be against them or may simply be indifferent about their problems in society, but then their son or daughter comes out, or their grandson or granddaughter, and suddenly grandma and grandpa are listening. They are learning more about it, trying to do all they can to help their grandchild. I've seen this happen time and time again. The same is true with the environment. The way to free us from being indifferent, the way to get us to take action, is by getting to know nature. If we knew the bog turtle and the swallow-tailed kite, if we knew the otter and the gray tree frog, if we knew the hooded warbler and the Virginia pine, if we knew the chimpanzee and the elephant, we would love them and want to take care of them and save them. Saint Francis of Assisi, as you know, was a master at creating such relationships. I used to think that the whole brother-son, sister-moon stuff was kind of weird. I mean, Francis was known for going to extremes. But I get it now. Francis wasn't just being cute or poetic. He was being profoundly theological. The creatures of creation are our brothers and sisters. We are part of one family. And we have a responsibility to love them and save them because we have the same source. The same Creator. They are our brothers and sisters. In the words of that great theologian Bob Dylan, the voice of God is coming to us through them, blowing in the wind and in every grain of sand, and they are kin. So our call to action this morning is pretty clear cut. Get to know nature. Develop a relationship, so you will care enough to help nature. Now, some of you may find it harder and harder to get out of the house. And there may be people who will listen to this message on the internet who cannot get out at all. Maybe they are homebound or in a nursing home. If you are in that kind of situation, hopefully you can get outdoors some. But your knowledge and relationship with nature can grow indoors too, through flowers and plants and other things that people can bring us, through the water that comes through our faucets, quenching our thirst, helping us cook, giving us a bath. If you you ever get a chance to go over to Joel and Julie Varland's house, do so. All four of the Varlands will see things in their neighborhood, a sycamore ball, the shell of a squirrel. And they'll bring these things, a butterfly, they'll bring them and put them in their house so that they're appreciating nature even indoors. It's wonderful. I'm inviting you to their house. I hope the Varlands appreciate it. And then there are pictures. I know it's not the same as experiencing it live, but we can experience the glory of the Lord in creation through stunning paintings and photographs. You'll get a chance to experience this today as Bill Anderson and Pat Prokop have brought some of their pictures and photographs of nature and creation and will be on display today at the coffee hour. Be sure to experience that. We can also draw close to nature through poems and readings like the wonderful ones we were offered today. And especially through the Psalms, like Psalm 23, He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. Music can draw us closer to nature, can help our relationship, like the hymns we sang today, The Lone Wild Bird, which you have in your bulletin, and the words of the anthem the choir is about to sing. They're in your bulletin too. Take the bulletin home with you and reflect on these words in a prayerful manner. There are so many ways and opportunities to draw closer, to get to know brother sun, sister moon, mother earth. And we, here in Savannah, we should be really good at this, folks. We should be really good at connecting with nature and developing close relations with it, not only because it's all around us in this gorgeous city and community, but because we have the best song ever written about this connection. We have the best song about this special relationship. And as we play Mr. Mercer's song for you, I hope it encourages you to draw closer to nature and to get to know brother sun and sister moon and the creatures of Mother Earth. If we do, we will hear God's creation singing to us and preaching to us, reminding us that they are all here to help us, but that we also must help them and take care of them too.